Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We apologize for some of these technical delays, but here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, October 23rd, 2017. Two rebel groups fight each other in Kajukeji, creating panic in villages.
The former chairman of the Mayo, Victoria Gmashar, carried an offensive to our position on the 15th of October, but the SPLA repulsed them and defeated them. And then on the 17th, they started to engage each other.
And Kenya's central bank calls for asset freeze of six South Sudanese top military officials.
If these institutions are willing to comply and give the necessary information, it will be easy to at least get hold of some few of the assets and their resources. And those that were moved through the banking system should be able to be traced.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Continued over the weekend in Kajukeji, in Yei River State, between SPLA-IO rebels allied to former First Vice President Riek Machar and National Salvation Front rebels led by former Deputy Army Chief General Thomas Rilo. A number of people were killed during the fighting, which began early last week. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Officials from both sides blamed the other for starting the fighting. Brigadier General Isaac Farouk, one of the senior officers for the National Salvation Army, speaking in Kajukeji from an undisclosed location, told the South Sudan in Focus today that SPLA-IO forces loyal to Machar attacked NAS fighters who were heading to Jalimo, a brigade command base. Farouk says hundreds of SPLA-IO forces have defected and have now joined NAS forces.
We have a Brigadier General Kennedy Kanyi Warrior, who has already joined us with the 400 men and a couple of officers. And again, we have with us Brigadier General Chaplain Lumana Towe, who is the deputy of the Brigadier General Moses Lokuje, who has been attacking our forces. And again, we have the Major, Lodu Victor Jacob, who is the office manager of the governor of Yei River State, Governor Matata.
Farouk says after recent battles in Kajukeji, NAS fighters overran villages that were formerly under the control of SPLA-IO forces.
The moment we control the largest area, the IO force, which is here, is only now based in Kariwa at the border towards the local camp.
Farouk also claims NAS forces control Jalimo, Sokare, Kimu, Agana, Bamure, and Bori, which had all been under SPLA-IO control. Those claims could not be independently verified. Farouk says his group lost three officers and killed 10 SPLA-IO fighters. He says five SPLA-IO officers were captured. Colonel Lampaul Gabriel, deputy military spokesman for SPLA-IO forces, says NAS forces attacked SPLA-IO positions while they were fighting government forces last week. Colonel Gabriel says fighting between the two groups continued until yesterday. Gabriel says SPLA-IO forces killed 20 NAS fighters and disputes other claims made by Brigadier General Farouk.
We don't have 400 soldiers in Kajukeji. Now, where have they found these guys from? If they say mosque, how did they call Bori to be most of the place in Kajukeji? Because we are now in Sokare. We are in Limo, we are in Sokare. If they consider like Bori to be most of Kajukeji, then I'm very sorry. Because if they say most, what about the government? The government is in Mundari. They've gone back after taking Mundari. They came back. Then in Mere and in Jale. No, we are in control of three-quarters of what they are saying.
Colonel Gabriel says in the past, his group has tried without success to collaborate with the NASA leader, General Thomas Cirillo.
Our governors wrote to him a letter, including our deputy commander-in-chief, that is Henry Odua, also wrote to him a letter asking him to work together with us. But Thomas was adamant, and up to now he's still adamant to accept. He thinks that he can own us because we're Equatorian and because also he's an Equatorian, and he thinks that, okay, NAS is the Equatorian movement. No, NAS is a national movement, just like the SLA. Reducing us to an Equatorian movement is something that we're not going to accept.
And Gabriel says his group remains loyal to rebel leader Riek Machar. Yei River State Information Minister Alfred Kennedy Doko confirms the two rebel groups have been fighting in Kajokeji for days. He says early last week, government forces fought with the SPLA-IO forces, and shortly afterwards, the two rebel groups turned their guns to each other.
Those anti-peace element forces loyal to the former chairman of the Mayo, Victoria Machar, carry an offensive to our positions on the 16th of October, but the SPLA repulsed them and defeated them. And then on the 17th, they started to engage each other, the anti-peace elements forces.
Government forces, the SPLA-IO and NAS rebels are all fighting to control Kajokeji, which lies in a strategic area near the border with Uganda. This marks the first major battle between the two rebel groups in the area. Most residents had already fled to refugee camps in northern Uganda after fighting spread to the area in July last year. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The Central Bank of Kenya issued a circular last week ordering all commercial banks to identify and freeze the assets of all six South Sudanese military commanders sanctioned by the UN in 2015. Some Juba-based analysts say if all South Sudan's neighbors enforce the United Nations targeted sanctions on six individuals accused of obstructing peace, it will send a message to others still blocking the road to peace in South Sudan. Nabil Biagio has details for VOA from Juba.
The Central Bank of Kenya instructed all commercial banks and mortgage finance companies to implement UN Security Council Resolution 2206, which imposes a travel ban and asset freezes on three rebel commanders affiliated with rebel leader Riek Machar and three government army commanders accused of human rights violations and continuing the South Sudanese conflict. The circular says, all Kenyan banks must immediately freeze any funds, financial assets, and economic resources owned or controlled directly or indirectly by any of the six men. The directive also applies to any companies or Kenyan nationals associated with the six. SUD Institute policy analyst Augustino Tingmayai says, the move shows that some of South Sudan's neighbors are willing to get more involved in ending the violence in the country.
It shows that the region is coming forward, showing that it is concerned about violence and insecurity affecting South Sudanese people. But it also shows that the region is getting quite involved in implementing international protocols.
But Mayai says, it is still not clear if the targeted sanctions can bite hard enough to change the behavior of South Sudan's leaders. He says that will depend on whether South Sudan's other neighbors get on board.
Would Ethiopia be interested? Would Sudan be interested? And the same thing can be said about Uganda. There's a possibility. And if the entire region wakes up to push on this, perhaps there could be different results as opposed to what you normally see.
Mayai says, without rigorous and immediate enforcement by South Sudan's neighbors, the sanctions will have little effect.
Targeted sanctions don't normally work. And for the most part, they are used as a deterrent mechanism, right? And because they are a deterrent mechanism, you can find behavior change, perhaps in some areas, but not often. And so given the fact that some of these guys were sanctioned 2 years ago, if they had any funds, if they had any assets in the region, if those are still there, I would be surprised.
Izaru Richard Benson, who is head of business development at the Juba-based consultancy firm Connect Africa Limited, says, even though Kenya is moving to reinforce the sanctions 2 years after they were issued, the assets of the sanctioned military commanders can still be tracked down.
The duration is not a big issue, but the level of compliance to be rendered by these institutions where these commanders have their assets and all the things that were related to them. And if these institutions are willing to comply and give the necessary information, it will be easy to at least get hold of some few of the assets and their resources. And those that were moved through the banking system should be able to be traced.
Benson says Central banks in other neighboring countries should issue similar circulars.
Most of our politicians have good homes and good assets outside these countries. From the time they were in the bush to the time we got independence, and a lot of money has gone out of this country through them. And this money has gone into another economy. Probably it is now the responsibility of the recipient economy to politically be friendly to the body that is sanctioning these commanders.
The Central Bank of Kenya requires all commercial banks to report any and all progress that they have made on implementing the sanctions in a detailed report by November 5th. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Officials from Buma State say floods caused by heavy rains have destroyed more than 14,000 households and some government buildings across the state. The head of Buma's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission says thousands of people are living in open spaces and are in need of food, shelter and medicine. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Juba.
Buma Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Director Nyinginga Kiru calls the situation very bad. Speaking by phone from Pibor today, Kiru says thousands of civilians around Pibor town who used to reside near the river have been displaced by the flooding.
The situation is still worse. Since the flood has started, more number of people are really displaced to different locations. Some are rejoining their relatives whom are not yet affected by water. Some stay and open places under trees. And which is a bit is typical when there is rain, they just stay in the rain so far. So the situation is too worse.
Kiru says his commission and other local NGOs assessed the area and found that at least 14 schools have been completely flooded, making it impossible for students to attend classes. He says more than 15,000 hand water pumps are inaccessible and 320 shops have been destroyed in the main Pibor town market. Kiru says the massive amount of flooding makes residents in Boma vulnerable to diseases.
Malaria is there, coughing, and many other diseases like common diseases. This is what people are fearing. And the water is still increasing from the time that we are speaking, which is still keep population to displace from their respective houses.
Kiru says flooding has also destroyed many crops. Oscar Kabacha, who works for Plan International, says no humanitarian assistance has arrived so far.
Up to now, there's nothing is been done. There's nothing done completely. The assessment was done and reported to Juba. It was forwarded to UN OCHA for them to analyze what they can do so that to other humanitarian organizations to look at into it. To see what kind of needs do people need and what kind of help do people need for assistance for the moment.
Kiru is pleading with humanitarian agencies to come quickly to the area to help communities in desperate need of assistance. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the organizer of the South Sudan We Want campaign speaks out about Dong Samuel, who disappeared in Nairobi. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what core value do you live by?
I do value my education a lot because I know that with education I can go anywhere. I can explore the world. I can be whoever I want to be. I can go anywhere. I can do anything I want in life.
I live by the hard working as the core value and prioritizing the priorities. I like it just because when I live in hard working, I know for sure one day I might achieve something which I need in life.
It's respect. I love to be respected and I love to respect other people.
Okay, trust. So I love like someone I can trust. So I want someone to trust me because that's the way to go. Because if you don't trust someone, then there's nothing, there's no way you can go forward with it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Nikki Haley, has arrived in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. This is among the first visits to Africa by a senior member of President Donald Trump's administration. Diplomats hope Ambassador Haile's visit will shed light on Trump's plan to engage with the continent. Haile said last week, President Trump wants to build his Africa policy back to what it was under President George W. Bush. Haile's visit comes after four U.S. soldiers were killed in an October 4th ambush in Niger. A senior African diplomat at the UN said the Niger crisis shows the Trump administration cannot take a hands-off approach to Africa. Haile is expected to meet with South Sudan President Salva Kiir and Congolese President Joseph Kabila to, in her words, deliver a strong message that their government need to stop making the work of aid workers and peacekeepers more difficult. Haile was speaking to the George W. Bush Institute in New York last week when she made her remarks. The fifth installment of the campaign entitled The South Sudan We Won is scheduled for release this week. The campaign is a video montage of different South Sudanese voices describing what they want for the future of South Sudan. While organizers of the campaign celebrate the landmark first episode, they are also thinking about Dong Samuel, a former secretary for the South Sudan Law Society who disappeared in Nairobi. Dong spoke to the campaign in February and then went missing in March. His whereabouts are still unknown. Geoffrey Duke, the organizer of the campaign, tells Ayen Bure Dong's words still resonate months after his disappearance.
I remember his quote. He says, "I want to see a South Sudan where there is justice, where there is peace, equality, and justice." And these are not controversial demands. And seeing someone who envisages this for his country disappear a month later is a difficult thing to go through. And I remember during the launch in Nairobi, when his segment came, I could see Fox struggling to hold back their tears. Like, is he alive? Is he death? Is he already dead? And why would such thing like happen to him? And given the fact that up to now he's missing, it's not a good thing. It's particularly difficult for me because some people might want to create a connection between what he said in the campaign and his disappearance, which of course is a conversation that is difficult to have.
How did Dong Samuel's disappearance impact the campaign?
There's definitely it didn't deter us from having more South Sudanese to speak about the South Sudan they want. If anything, it has given us more inspiration to let more South Sudanese speak about the vices that they see surrounding South Sudanese societies, both within the country and in diaspora. And subsequently, we've even seen people who have not got in contact with the story of Dong saying stuff like, when someone says a negative thing that the government is doing, they do not have to disappear. And that is kind of part of the main dreams that South Sudanese hold so dear. So it has not deterred us. If anything, it continues to inspire us to let South Sudanese have a say, and that kind of South Sudan where people disappear because of perhaps their expression is not that which we fought and voted for.
That was Geoffrey Duke, organizer of the South Sudan We Want video campaign. He was speaking to Ayen Bure from our studio here in Washington. With just 3 days before Kenya holds a rerun of its August elections, tensions are rising. Opposition leader Raila Odinga says the elections will not be held, and his followers have called for more protests. President Uhuru Kenyatta's Jubilee Party insists the vote will go ahead and promises to ensure the safety of all who vote. Our colleague Vincent Macquarie is in Nairobi and spoke to VOA's Katie Pound Dawson on the latest.
We have those two hardline positions, but at the same time, in the middle of this is the Electoral Commission. The Electoral Commission chairman, Mr. Wafula Chebukati, is holding a meeting today with his returning officers from across the country. And what they're trying to determine is whether they will be able, in fact, to conduct elections in certain parts of this country on Thursday, depending on the conditions on the ground, because the law provides that the Electoral Commission can, on determining that the conditions are not right to conduct a free and fair election, they can actually suspend elections in those particular areas.
Is there a chance they might go ahead and suspend and then hold the vote at a later date in those areas?
That is what the rules provide, that they can actually suspend the vote, but then that vote has to take place within about 7 days in the same areas, and therefore the total vote counting will have to be suspended until votes are cast in those particular areas. So we are waiting to see what the chairman says after the closed-door meeting. But there's also something else here. There are concerns that perhaps the chairman of the electoral body could, if he does feel that he cannot conduct a proper election and that the principals involved here, that is the president of the country, the leader of the ruling coalition, and the opposition leader, Raila Odinga, refuse to come and hold a dialogue with him to figure out the best way forward. If he does strongly feel that under those conditions he cannot deliver the kind of results that will be acceptable, he could quit. Essentially, he could step down. That leaves the country in a state of confusion because under the Constitution right now, only the chairman can declare the president. And without him, right now, if he quit, the elections will effectively be cancelled until they go through a process of getting another chairman for the Electoral Commission.
Both the UN and AU have issued calls for peace ahead of the election. And I understand that the Jubilee Coalition is also calling for restraint. Are there genuine fears of violence?
Yes, there are genuine fears of violence. Both sides have followers who are very, very animated. In fact, the positions that have been taken by the main characters in this political race are so strong and in fact, are so insightful that most of the supporters are willing to go to any length to maintain the positions of their leaders and their parties. Kenyans have gone through this kind of cycle of violence in the past. It looks like the symptoms are there. The signs are there that if certain things don't happen right, it can trigger violence, and it doesn't take much. It's a little spark, and something terrible could happen. So many people are concerned about that.
That's my colleague Vincent Macquarie speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson from Nairobi. That's the end of our show for this Monday. We'll leave you with the song Zawaj Ghali by Sultan Clinton. Susanna, Sultanin, Bijan Three, Champion. Madame Taisim, Susanna, in a guinea sawa. Hey, Mugar Basena, Samana Tazawaja, Madame Taitana, Uroa Pibeto, Montali Abutonati. Oh, oh, Dunia, Anabila Mulusu. Oh, oh, Madame Taifu. Hey.
sanin jaka wa jaja jaja mo jira mo bana da besar tamam lakin kari na jaja aju zuru 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 gara mi tala ni charta ke da to bitala.
We have been listening to Sultan Clinton with the song Zawaj Gali. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We would like to know what you think about our show. You can leave a message. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us on our website, on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. No, I'm telling you a lie.